Federal News Radio's Emily Kopp is here, and part of our special report, the reverse retirement wave, planning for a workforce that's aging in place. And our focus today is Workforce 2025, Emily. You have been speaking to the kinds of people that federal HR leaders have told me all week long they hope are part of Workforce 2025, the folks who will be doing the jobs at the very highest levels of the federal government 10 years from now. What have you found are common threads among the things that people care about their futures, who are in that age cohort and career cohort? And what are they thinking about what they would like to see put in place or available to them, that kind of thing, as they look forward 10 years to continuing their careers in the federal government?
So overall, a lot of people have different ideas, but if I had to sum it up, I would say that they want a government that is truly responsive to the public at large. You know, you hear a lot about customer service. They really want to see this sort of thing happen. They point to examples where it's happening. Another thing is that they want to break down the silos, particularly when it comes to HR, I think, so that it's just a lot easier to work for the government, and that the government makes better use of small businesses, of volunteers, of others who perhaps don't have a big name behind them or aren't big contractors and the like, but still have a lot of talent to offer the government and don't necessarily want to do it as full-time employees, mm-hmm. but the government can leverage all these people everywhere to get things done in a better way.
We're starting to see some of the folks who are in the millennial cohort who are staying in government moving up the ladder a little bit, and I hear more all the time about details and assignments and those kinds of things that HR leaders are using as tools to be able to say, hey, 25% of your workload is going to be in this area of specialty. Doesn't maybe have anything at all to do with the other 75% of your job, but it's something that the individual employee signs up for or whatever. I'm hearing more about those kinds of things than I ever have before. I'm also hearing more than I ever have before about customer service. You mentioned it a moment ago. What specifically are some examples of what some folks are telling you about customer service?
Yeah, so let me play you a few clips. I mean, the first one is of Karina Dubois. She's at the State Department in a new media role with the Bureau of Consular Affairs. And this is her picture of customer service in the future.
I think that the government is going to be forced to be more responsive to the needs of our customers. And those customers are not only public U.S. citizens, but also internal stakeholders. Right now, with technology and the use of social media, we've taken away a lot of the gatekeepers or barriers where people, citizens now have direct access, especially if you look at a local government level where they have things like 311 and you can hit a button on your phone and get your pothole in front of your house fixed. Governments are becoming more responsive and people are going to continue to expect that.
So I want to make a plug for what we've got on federalnewsradio.com because we have done very short interviews with places like 311 from Montgomery County, Maryland, mm-hmm. where they tell you exactly how they put it together and why it works so well for their residents. So with that example, I spoke with Leslie Hamm, who directs 311, and she said that they basically consolidated several call centers into one. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a resident, you just call this number and you say, hey, I want a recycling bin or I want to know how to get the roads paved. Doesn't matter. And they're going to route your calls because mm-hmm. the ideal behind it is that you just know what you need. You don't necessarily understand the government entity that can get you that. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. The federal government, of course, is much larger than the county, but in 10 years, you know, with a little bit of faith and hard work, it could get there too.
Well, and we start to see this already in the federal government with some of the efforts, particularly regarding web presences, where individual agencies are talking about how do we bring everybody who's interested in our material to one portal. The Commerce Department just went through that process. And we're also seeing it through the General Services Administration, where they're trying to filter as much information and as much direction as they can through USA.gov. That's been an ongoing effort over the past probably 5 years or so. How is innovation a piece of this? Because innovation seems to be a piece of everything that we talk about having anything to do with the government. How is innovation influencing the way that people are thinking about whether they want to be in the workforce in 2025?
It's an interesting question because you think, what is innovation? It's just doing things differently. And everybody I spoke with clearly saw how the government was trying, but they would like them to do things differently to a greater degree. So One example that I'd like to share is of David Bray. He's the Chief Information Officer of the Federal Communications Commission, and he had one of the more outlandish ideas about breaking down those silos in HR so that federal employees could be truly federal employees as opposed to agency-specific employees.
Maybe they're working for, say, the Centers for Disease Control, but they're also good enough that there's also things they could do with, like, USAID, or maybe it cuts into what's being done with the Department of Defense, because whatever they're working on actually cuts across all different agencies. And I really think the nature of the problems we're really dealing with and why there might now be maybe frustration with government is we designed for very well addressing of issues that span specific sectors or specific verticals, but the issues that are really hard right now actually cut across all departments and agencies. And so we actually need to think about how do we have sort of these change agents that can move across departments and agencies and really cross-pollinate ideas.
That's David Bray, the Chief Information Officer at the Federal Communications Commission and one of the big thinkers about what the government looks like a decade, 20 years from now even. You have a terrific story about this on federalnewsradio.com. It's just one of the resources in our special report, The Reverse Retirement Wave, Planning for a Workforce That's Aging in Place. And you've got a military perspective here that I think is particularly interesting because something that David alluded to there is the ability to break down silos and for people to transition from one agency to another or one part of an agency to another a lot more fluidly. That's very difficult right now. You talked to a naval officer in Norfolk about even going more silo breaking than that by going to groups outside government that are standing by to help.
Yeah, and that's Ben Coleman, and he's chairman of the Defense Entrepreneurs Foundation. That's a nonprofit that is working with small businesses involved with the military. But his idea is to have the government more easily leverage all the volunteers or grassroots organizations that are able to help fill in the gaps.
I think the government would do well to adapt a more wide dispersed engagement with the public. And by that, I mean starting to leverage a lot of the grassroots organizations that have popped up to address public needs. I'm seeing this a lot in the military innovation space, where instead of having top-down directions of, hey, this is the strategy we're pursuing, you see junior officers and members in the national security arena forming organizations to influence the conversation while also building networks of their own that can have outsized influence.
And so the example that he gave was Team Rubicon, which is a really cool idea that sprung up from military veterans who wanted to put their logistics and disaster training experience to work after they left the military. And so this is a basically volunteer team that has gone and helped out with Superstorm Sandy a few years ago when it devastated the East Coast, and they coordinated with FEMA to do that. Now they're in Nepal, and they're working with USAID in sort of an unofficial role as helpers. But the idea is that in 10 years, there would be something maybe a little bit more formal and official. So it'd be easier for these groups like Team Rubicon, which is really innovative, to speak. And we've got a short interview again with the director of field operations for the organization.
Another initiative that the administration has pushed very heavily over the last several years is bringing more people with disabilities into government and making sure that the accommodations exist so that they can work effectively and efficiently. And it strikes me that that's an area that we can expect to see long after the administration is no longer the administration, because that's an area of workforce development where I think the federal government has really been out front. As you dug into this, you talked to some folks that are active in that community. What are they saying about what they would like to see the government do, both folks who are in government now and folks who are kind of on the outside looking in?
Sure. Well, let me just play a short snippet of an interview I did with Jason Olson, who is head of Federal Employees with Disabilities, because what he sums up is so simple.
By 2025, that will mark the 52nd year from the issuance of the Rehab Act of 1973. So we're talking half a century in which the federal government laid out a mandate for the federal government to be this model employer. Unfortunately, we haven't reached that goal yet.
What Olson was describing, he says, you know, today, even though the government says it has tried, there are still barriers in terms of like reasonable accommodations, in terms of technology federal employees use, and Schedule A, this hiring authority that is supposed to enable people with disabilities to more easily enter the government, requires them to have a 2-year probationary period, unlike most other ones where it's just 1 year, 1.5 year max. So he says these things need to be changed. But really, when he looks today, what gives him hope are the advocates that he sees in the community.
I think the brightest seed that I've seen so far is that, you know, a lot of these folks who are coming out of, you know, the ADA generation, who are people with disabilities, the previous generation really fought hard to get access into the buildings. Now that we have that access, this ADA generation is really pushing hard to get good jobs in those buildings and really to be mainstreamed and to take that special label off of everything. And that's really what we're looking for from the government. And that's really what makes an inclusive employer.
And so that's just a sampling of some of the innovative younger federal leaders that we talked to and how they say they'd like the government to change in 10 years. We've got it all at federalnewsradio.com, along with some of those examples they've pointed to of reasons why they could see that change in 10 years.
I want to thank you very much for this terrific contribution to our special report. All the resources from the reverse retirement wave, planning a workforce that's aging in place, right now on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.